Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Way back in 2005, two brothers set off on a road trip that would save the world and change television.
Laurel and Hardy.
No. For 15 seasons and 327 episodes, Supernatural took audiences on a wild ride of family, fate, and faith with a rocking soundtrack and a seriously cool car.
But that was then, Bobbo, and this is now. And yes, the show has quote-unquote ended, but we're not quite done with the journey.
No, we're not.
And that's why we're watching it all over again, or for Rob and me, for the first time, diving deep into every episode of Supernatural with the fine folks who made it. And we're taking you along for the ride.
Whether you like it or not. I'm Rob Benedict. I played Chuck Shirley, a.k.a. God.
Spoiler.
Yeah, it is a bit of a spoiler. But hey, spoilers are fair game here.
I'm fine. And I'm Richard Spade Jr., and I played the Trickster, also known as the Archangel Gabriel. And I did a little bit of Loki work in there.
Okay, you know what? We're running out of time.
Okay, well, we'll be talking about the entire series, so whatever we say, accept it. You've been warned.
So buckle up and settle in.
Because this, my friend, is Supernatural, then and now.
Hey, everybody, it's Rob Benedict.
Hi, my name is Richard Spate.
And we're talking about Season 2, Episode 12, Night Shifter.
Night Shifter.
Hey, but before we get going, Rich, did you know that we have a Patreon now for this podcast? Yeah.
We do?
Yeah. Now, we already have one for our Kings of Con podcast. And for anyone who does that, you know that it's the way to go. You got to subscribe to us on Patreon. There's either the angel level or the archangel level.
I'm going to be the archangel level because I played an archangel.
Okay. Wow. Name drop of yourself.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You'll get early access to episodes, exclusive content, and all kinds of benefits.
Can't wait for my benefits. Bring on the benefits.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Rich is an archangel.
I'm going to start calling you Robbie Benefit because it's like Benedict, but different.
That's right. Benefits. You might also get some of those Zoom interviews you've been asking for.
Robbie, I have some questions for you when I get my benefit.
Great. We want to try.
Zoom interview, Rich, asking Robbie the questions that people are afraid to ask.
This is the kind of back and forth you're going to get only if you subscribe to our Patreon. And let me tell you, too, if you subscribe to the one on Kings of Con, this is going to be better. And I'm saying that because it's run by an actual producer who's going to do it really, really well.
Oh, yeah.
But if it was just me and Rich, we'd be dropping the ball. So it's a really good thing. So go to patreon.com/SPN then and now to learn more and sign up.
Yeah, do it now.
Okay, Night Shifter.
Tell us all about it, Bobbo.
Sam and Dean pose as FBI agents to investigate a string of robbers who killed themselves after the holdup.
That seems pointless. If you hold up the bank, you can't spend the dough if you off yourself.
It does. It does seem ridiculous, but nevertheless, their investigation brings them to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where they meet Ronald Resnick, an ex-bank security guard and conspiracy theorist.
Mm.
Now, Ronald doesn't believe that the crimes were committed by the folks accused of the robberies, but by a being that is able to change and assume identities, a person that he calls a mandroid.
Mandroid.
Yeah, the mandroid. Now, the brothers confiscate the security tapes in Ronald's possession and assure him there's no such thing. This is the work of people.
Good old-fashioned people, Bobbo.
Good old-fashioned people. Actually, in reality, the boys know that this is the work of a shapeshifter and are able to identify the bank that is the next robbery target. Sam and Dean pretend to work at the security company. They're able to view the security cameras and identify the branch manager as the shapeshifter because of his glowing eyes on a security camera.
Right.
Before Sam and Dean can move in on him, Ronald bursts in and takes everyone hostage. He believes the mandroid is there.
That's an extreme move by Ronald, I'm just going to say.
Truly, truly is. Dean levels with Ronald and explains it isn't a mandroid, but a shapeshifter. Together, they lock everyone in the vault and go looking for the branch manager. However, he's already shed his skin and assumed the identity of somebody else.
Yick.
Police have now surrounded the bank. Sam's worried about Dean getting arrested.
Yeah, because Dean's already in hot water. You know, he's already wanted for crimes that he didn't commit, but a shapeshifter sort of framed him. So
that's,
you know,
right. That's right. And then a hostage starts to have a heart attack.
Or faked a heart attack. I don't know. I didn't trust that hostage.
A heart attack hostage. And in the commotion to get him out, the shapeshifter makes a run for it.
Classic shapeshifter. More like shape runner.
Shape runner. That should have been the name of the episode. And for the record, I wouldn't put a hyphen in shapeshifter. I say make it all one word.
Okay. Well,
Ronald pursues the shapeshifter who made a run for it, runs by a window, and is shot by a police sniper. Dean is able to get the ailing man outside, but is caught on camera. The FBI agent in charge of the hostage situation calls Dean and tells him he's been looking for him since St. Louis. And what happened down there?
SWAT.
SWAT storms the building. We got a SWAT storm coming over east side of the city. SWAT storms the building, and the boys are able to isolate and kill the shapeshifter. They're able to overpower the two SWAT team members and wear the uniforms to escape to the Impala. Okay, Rich, Night Shifter.
Loved it. Right out of the gate. I'm going to tell you right now. I thought it was great. It felt big. Felt like Dog Day Afternoon meets, an action movie. Because it had all the people outside, the big crowd sequences, and they blocked off a street of Vancouver.
Yep.
Helicopters around. And it was just big, man. It felt big.
A little bit Heat. Dog Day. Definitely Dog Day Afternoon. Yeah. And everybody in it is so great. And, Chris Gauthier, I had the pleasure of meeting a few years ago.
He's the gentleman who plays Ronald, right?
Yeah. And he nails that part. And then Malik plays the FBI guy.
He's great. Malik Whitfield is so great.
Yeah. And he means business. And there are just so many things that are introduced. There's this idea that now Dean is a man on the run. Sam and Dean are like boys on the run from the cops. And then you've also got your Monster of the Week episode. But within that, there's this awesome character of Ronald.
Right.
Who goes from like a witness, like their main witness, to actually this instigator of the bank robbery. And then it becomes just the whole this.
Yeah. I want to give a big shout out to that actor and to Phil Segrisha, because that character could have been a real cartoon. Could have been real, almost silly.
Right.
Because it's sort of could have become a stock character of a conspiracy theorist. But I thought that Chris stayed just this side of that and kept it grounded and real and made for a really a character we related to. So when we lost him, it was gut wrenching. And that's a guest star. Like, we barely knew the guy, but still felt for him and felt like his heart was in the right place. He was doing his best and got caught up in a bad situation. It's just really well done.
Yeah. Here's a question. Who had the combo of the bank vault?
Ooh.
I mean, because they could spin the thing that locks it, right?
Right.
But then how do they get it open?
That's a good question.
Maybe it's not that kind of vault. Maybe you just turn it the other way and it opens right away.
Maybe it's just like, you're just spinning the bolts into the wall. I don't know, man. I guess it wasn't a combo, but nonetheless.
Okay. But no, I loved it. I thought it was epic. Kudos to Phil and to Bette Edlin for writing it. I mean, it's really hard to get, what is it? 40 minutes, 44 minutes when you take out the ads, right?
Right.
And to fit this much information into one synopsis for an episode, really great.
It was big. It was a lot of story points, a lot of character development from not just Jared and Jensen's story, but the guest cast and, you know, the switcheroo of them thinking they had the shapeshifter in the form of the girl, but then she passes out and they're like, wait a minute. Like, that was all just so well done. The fight. Right. With the actress Georgia was so great, and it was like a girl in a nightgown fighting Dean, and it was intense. At no point was it tongue-in-cheek or silly. It was just really well done.
Yeah, and he never said, like, I can't hit a girl. Like, they just went at it.
They really went at it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
The one thing I thought was funny that kind of felt like, okay, TV moment, was at the end, suddenly there's just two FBI guys in their underwear locked up in a closet. Like, they never showed the guys sneaking up on a couple of dudes or, it doesn't really show the FBI in the best light of, like, they can be duped by the two very people they're searching for and get the jump on them and knock them unconscious without alerting any of the other FBI agents in the building and get them down their skivvies.
I was also impressed that Sam took down, like, four of them, like, guns and all. Those guys are just like...
Yeah, I saw that. That was a real action moment.
Whack, whack, whack. And they're all down.
And what are the odds that they would cork a 6'5" FBI guy? Because, like, otherwise, Sammy's like, looking like you were wearing, like, a little kid's FBI outfit on a normal guy.
Hey, but Johnny. Johnny, who's the big guy? I don't recognize him.
Why is he wearing shorts on the heels of that? When they get out and they're up the stairs and they're going to the Impala and they just break into a saunter. And I'm like, okay.
Right,
that seemed a little like
Yeah.
Wouldn't you be a little nervous?
Like,
still
okay, let's go. Start the car. Start the car.
Like, they just start moseying through the parking garage.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get to the Apollo. I'm like, guys, we got a ticking clock here. You're being pursued and you're in stolen FBI gear. Like, you got to get on your horse here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When they pull their ski mask up and Jared, it becomes kind of a beanie.
Yeah.
I thought, that was his first. It was Jared loves his beanies.
He does.
That was the first moment. It was the origin story of the beanie.
And by beanies, we mean hats, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
We mean headgear. Okay. So I'm going to give it a beard rating, and I'm going to go this. I don't do this very often, Robbie. I'm going to go full bushy beard. Chris Stapleton, big beard.
Same. Well-groomed, well-grown beard. My favorite so far of season two.
Same. Just rock solid. I mean, every single guest star was a home run. It just was built solid from the ground up. Great job, Ben Edlin. Great job, Phil Segrisha. Great job to all the actors on the show.
Awesome. So before we get to our interview, I'd like to just take a pause. And someone we were at a convention in Rome a few weeks ago, and somebody suggested that we take a minute to talk about where Sam and Dean are in their journey. And I think that was a good suggestion. So let's just talk about for just a quick second, like, so what's going on the overall arc of their relationship right now this season? And correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I see it, like, there's this odd sort of tension going on because Dad told Dean before Dad died, you're going to have to kill Sam, maybe? Right?
Well, yeah, that's what we thought. At one point, I thought it might be a demon is your dad.
Yeah, and he's not your brother, which really got to my head. And now I can't remember if that's true or not, but I guess it's not.
No.
So, and then, you know, besides just the sort of normal conflict that they have, that's this thing that keeps going on where Sam is concerned about it.
You feel like Sam is concerned about it, but Sam's also kind of morphing into this. He's almost taking the reins, and he's being more violent towards Sterling K. Brown's character in the earlier episodes in season two. And even in this one, you made the comment about him whooping up on those FBI
guys.
You
know, yeah.
Take the sort of like, is that possible or not possible out of it. That's just Sam Winchester wouldn't have done that a season ago.
Right.
You know?
Right. Agreed. And, I'm just interested to see how it unfolds, between the two of them. Cause you know, there's some episodes where I'm like, wow, they're not getting along. So this is something bubbling underneath.
Well, I mean, they did they were a little infighting in this situation. They were, Sam was really annoyed at Dean that he put himself in harm's way because here they are. Dean's being pursued by the feds anyway. You know what I mean? So there's a lot going on. It's bigger than just daddy issues now.
And he's kind of jealous when he's in the vault, and then the hot girl who worked there was like, "Oh, your brother's such a hero."
That was a good eye roll moment for him.
Yeah, yeah. That was the same girl where he's checking out her bum on the camera. Did you notice that?
I didn't.
In the video room, he like zooms in on her bum.
Oh, right. I don't know. Was that Georgia?
He's like, Dean, we got to look at their eyes. Her eyes are up there, Dean. You didn't catch that?
Yes, of course. I don't remember that. It must be the same, probably, because that is the featured actress of the episode, so it must be.
Real creepo move there by Dean, though.
Classic Dean.
It's a classic Dean.
Dated move.
Yeah. All right, let's get to our interview.
All right, it's time for, our interview with two of the greats. I mean, we've had Ben Edlin on this show. We've had Phil Segrisha, but we have never had them together.
That's right.
Until now.
Or as I like to call them, Bill.
Is that their celebrity?
Yeah, Ben Edlund, Phil Segrisha.
Or Finn.
Yeah, Phil Segrisha directed 45 episodes of Supernatural. He's now directing The Boys. And Ben Edlund wrote 24 episodes of Supernatural and created and executive produced The Tick. Here they are. All right, everybody, we have a real treat back to join us, but not the first time they've been on the show, first time they've been together. Writer, producer Ben Edlund and editor, producer, writer, just overall personality, not writer, but a writer in my heart, Phil Segrisha.
What does that mean, a writer?
I don't know. I was just trying to cover.
This is a big deal, Robbie. This is what we call a Hollywood moment. When you get two industry bigwigs, obviously individually, we've had Ben Edlund. We've had Phil Segrisha. But this is a powerhouse combo we got going on here.
Yeah, it really is. It really
intense.
Is.
So Ben
wrote the episode that we're talking about, and Phil directed it. Let's get that out of the way off the bat.
Yeah, Phil did not write it. Was this the first team up? Was this the first Segrisha Edlund 1-2 punch?
Oh yeah,
it was.
And not the last.
No. Had much more fun moments.
So here's a question. I know that Supernatural is like its own animal and that it typically does not have a writer on set. Like, you know, a lot of shows will have the writer come up and be a part of the process. Not so much in Supernatural, but obviously in the pre-production process, everybody's on the same calls and on the same page. How much interaction did you guys have and how much did the script adjust from what you were handed, Phil, to what ended up being shot in that sort of pre-production process?
Well, I'm in LA a lot where the writers are because I'm in post. So Ben and I would be in the same offices. And I'm sure we had many a conversation before I went up to prep. You know, there was always just the things that you read into it. One of the best things about having a script by Ben and having the casting that we did was it takes about 75% of the weight off your shoulders as a director. You know, it's like when you get a good story and it and everything works and makes sense, and then you get some casting gems like we had in this episode. It was
Chris Gauthier was really great.
Yeah, really fun. And the young lady, I think her name was Georgia, who is the one that fights Jensen.
Yeah,
and,
right.
In her slip and her cut neck. She was a gamer. I mean, really totally into it.
That was one of the most brutal fights, I think, at least for Earth. It was just incredibly raw, and you don't feel any sense that Dean is undermatched. Like,
right.
That was
a beautifully, beautifully made scene, Phil.
Well, thank you. But it was where we had to kind of play the rules. You're looking at a woman in a slip, you know, an undergarment, and she needs to hold her own because of, you know, and it was super fun. Jensen was all game for it, and so was Georgia. So I remember that fight because it was a horrible, like, location. We were actually in a basement somewhere. Might have been that bank. That bank basically opened their vault literally to us.
Was it a working bank?
Yeah, it was a real bank. It's RBC Bank in Vancouver.
And, but not like, not retired. It was like still, they just shut down for the day.
It was still, but I think they had, I don't know, they allowed filming and it was big and it had all those staircases. And then we built some of the hallways and some of the back room stuff on stage, but it all kind of, Jerry Wanick and the art department made it seamless. And it was super fun because we got everything we needed outside with the police and the SWATs and FBI.
It was a big episode. A lot going on.
There was a lot. Yeah. And it was weird because it was like this weird action show, horror show kind of, because there was a lot of moments that weren't necessarily horror elements. You know, it was about them being caught and about how bad you felt for Ronald, you know.
Yeah, man.
There was things that were interesting. You know, Rob mentioned it was a big show, and it was a very big show, which you wouldn't necessarily think if you saw it described. You would almost think it's a bottle episode because they're all in a bank and they're all in a vault, but it's far from the case. I was struck by how big it started out of the gate. You know, all that, you know, news footage, which sometimes in a TV show, you feel like they, you know, put three people with notepads in a corner and, you know, just kind of shoot it and hope that the walla sound they add later makes it sound big. But this looked big. I mean, it looked like you shut down a street of Vancouver at night and
yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Was that already in the script or was that an edit choice to make that the news? You do kind of a cut out of.
Right. Out of then, the. Out of the teaser into a news break.
Yeah.
I think that was scripted. But, you know, that's also one of those moments. Even by that point, I had done enough television where when you write in a scene like that, you're already picturing what you're talking about. Like, oh, there's a news van. It's like five cops in a news van. And but no, it was really powerful. I also love the way that it works with the cop that walks by the entrance and he just looks like he's ignoring it. And then that, I don't recall necessarily. I think that's a kind of moment that Phil might have created.
That's an homage to the Anderson tapes, which was a Sean Connery movie in the 70s.
Wow.
They're gonna rip off all these expensive condos in the whole building. And somebody has been illegally wiretapping most of the people in this building. And so the cops have all the info, but they can't use any of it. In fact, they have to erase the tapes at the end of the movie. But there's a moment where a person goes by on a bike and looks, and then you see him go around the corner and there's 50,000 cops, you know?
Right.
I think it was probably that in my head, because it was kind of one of those to help keep the tension, like, oh, they're not going to get out of this, you know? Yeah. And this was kind of, we had already started down the road on the show of the boys being fugitives, you know, we'd already set that up. Right. So this was an extension of that being, mm-hmm. you know, on the run.
It was so effective though. And it's so big. There were several elements about this story that felt big. Going back to the fight, one of the things I thought was really cool about the fight between Jensen and Georgia was the peeling off of the arm skin. Was that a Phil thing or was that a Ben thing?
No, I think that was in the script, because I think we wanted to make sure the audience knew who she was.
It was really cool and so effectively done. And again, you know, beating the rush on effects back in the day, because, you know, I'm sure that took a fair amount of practical application of something to get
peeled off. That's all it was. It was all practical. It was like goo under, she had this arm. And we could repeal it, you know, put it back on. And they just had this layer of goop underneath it. So when he grabs it, it just sloughs off, you know. And
how many takes do you remember? How many times you pulled that arm?
I don't know. I know we could redo it, but it was like not as effective. But it was the middle of a fight. So it kind of helped that, you know, you could get to that point, you know, do the fight. And then we put it on her. And, you know, and then it was just that one piece of the arm and he holds it up. And that's
But then the rest of the fight, she's got this scabby, bloody arm. Phil.
Well, you got to talk to Toby Lindela. He did the effects.
Okay. I will.
That's good fake skin.
Yeah.
So we're halfway through season two and a menagerie of monsters have started to develop. We got crossroad demons, vampires, shapeshifters, vengeful spirits. Did this idea start with the monster or the trapped in a bank concept?
I believe that this, that's a good question.
I know I didn't write it. So that's why it's actually a good question.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a piece of knowledge that might be nice to have, I guess. The possessor of it.
Somebody should interview you and ask that question. Then we'd really know. You know?
I mean, I think the bank as the form, it had a lot to do with it, but it was also, it was kind of the ask that they be trapped in that situation. And we hadn't repeated a monster like the ship. That was the first repeat on the shapeshifter, if I'm not mistaken. And so that in itself was kind of a little bit of a, what can we do to sort of vary a pre-existing monster? I like stuff like that where you meet it again and you can talk about how we met this one in Milwaukee and this one in, you know, like St. Louis. And it's all like, to me, there's something that reinforces that underlying fabric of hunter reality and sort of hunter subculture. So that to me is exciting. But yeah, the shapeshifter happened to be a really also flexible monster for like, who the hell would do that and why would they? Well, shapeshifters are almost human, but very like nutty and sort of idiosyncratic and kind of obsessive. So it was a useful monster.
I thought that was interesting because it said that there was a dialogue about how they are almost people. So they have greed for money. Like it wasn't just, I want to eat blood or some monster drive. Right. It was actually a human greed that drove them, which I thought was really cool because it sort of, maybe this is the wrong word, but humanized this monster, you know, like, oh, I understand this monster more than I understand other monsters. They're driven by human frailty. You know, they just happen to have another skill set to go about it. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think they make an interesting like stand-in for some of the things that we're actually rationally afraid of in the people around us, which would be sociopath or psychopath, people who can step into different sort of just personas and the objectives. That's not to say that those people are less than human. That would not be correct. But more like more that you know, it's it plays with some of the fears evoked by the people around us and what they can be hiding and stuff. So and then also if you pull on them, they just get all gross and rubbery and disgusting. Yeah.
Is that a conversation that was had in the room? Like these traits, the rules that monsters abide by in the supernatural universe, you know, can ghosts go through doors and that kind of thing. In yeah. this world, was this a detail that was sort of sussed out the room? Do they have yes. human desires and that kind of thing?
I think so. I mean, I think it came initially from the first one, Skin or Skins, like yeah. That a lot of what was established there in terms of the shapeshifter psychology, this was a slightly more evolved one that could shapeshift with less pain and in shorter order. Didn't have to have, there were some elements. So there was sort of like, it was a variation, but it was in the same sort of pocket of those creatures. But like every time we talked about either a new creature or building out on an existing creature, you know, those were some of the most fun times. I, having had a lot of like role-playing game experience, you know, you argue about what the monsters are, but that's all we would do is you're like, well, oh, but what if you cut off its head? yeah.
And the same true for you, Phil, your pre-production meetings. Are you talking about, okay, this is what the skin's got to look like when, you know, the body suit?
Yeah, after. I mean, we kind of learned a lesson with skin and that worked mm-hmm. really well. The teeth, all that close-up stuff. Toby, who was our special effects makeup crew chief at that time, was fantastic. He's an Emmy winner guy. And, you know, he just would take it on his own. And, you know, he knew this was a horror show and there's elements that have to be that ick factor, that gross factor. You know, when Ronald falls on that big slimy heap.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, he picks up some and that's the most gross part is like, he's not grossed out. He's intrigued by it. He's like,
it's so lifelike.
And it's like, he's like picking up, you know, lasagna noodles and
smelling it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He thinks he's picking up some kind of special effect makeup.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so here's a question for the group. And Rob, maybe we've already know this. So maybe this is a dumb question. But what do shapeshifters look like when they're not assuming the form of somebody else?
Ooh.
Do we know?
You have to go to the Splinter Prime, I guess.
I mean, so I'm not missing something. We haven't seen that yet.
I don't think we have seen that. I was always intrigued by it, partly having written two of them now. Well, later, by the time I exit because of Monster Movie, you know, so there are multiple sort of iterations of the shapeshifter that the idea of all of them sort of being like, I mean, it's kind of nuts, but there's an old story by an excellent sci-fi author named Theodore Sturgeon that's called The Dreaming Crystals. It's great. Or The Synthetic Man. And it's about someone who could shapeshift. And they were, it's a screwed up story, man. It's two diamonds that are actually alien organisms that are in the eyes of this little Punch and Judy puppet create an entity. I don't want to get us caught up in it. But anyway, 50s, 60s sci-fi. And he doesn't have a normal form. He just starts to change. He needs to be a woman. He becomes a woman. He needs to be this guy he wants to kill. He becomes that guy. And there is no sort of, they don't, that's their biggest problem. They don't have I would imagine they look like a kind of a creepily not distinct person. Almost like, you know what? Right. You know that amazing. It was Gary Oldman in the Hannibal, the faceless victim of Hannibal Lecter in I forget which movie iteration, but he played this guy who like ate his own face. I think they look like that.
Oh,
ugh!
Wow, was it Maneater?
No,
that's the old Michael Manvert.
It was later on.
I think it was the second one.
Okay.
But it's almost like it's the chicken and egg, right? Which mm-hmm. came first? Because you almost, I almost don't want to know, you know, how it started. Because every decision you make to try and explain that, somebody's going to go, nope, that's not right. You know,
right?
You're kind of stuck, I think, trying to.
Well, the question is cool.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Right. So, and it's still alive and it didn't, through 15 years, so far as I know, you know better, Phil, it didn't get an answer, which means it's one of those ones you can kind of think about.
Right, for sure. You know.
Does it come back? Does Shapeshifter come back in Supernatural at some point?
Not that one.
That one gets killed.
Dean kills it.
Oh, yeah. Right, of course. It's dead.
The critter comes back, certainly in the Monster Movie, which I think is the fourth season.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there has to have been at least another one. And there are sort of companion critters that are close, somewhere between Lycanthrope and Shapeshifter. But, you know.
Is there a tie-in between the Shapeshifter in this episode, or in any episode, and werewolves? Because there was some reference in the script, in the story, like when he was describing how they kill.
Well, just because it's a silver bullet. Silver.
But that was the only correlation? That was the only...
Well, partly because, you know, werewolves change just like the shapeshifters change. So I think there's a continuity there.
Gotcha.
Bodily movement change.
So you can kill them with silver knife.
Silver reacts the same way.
Got it.
So I think that was the connection.
I think it's a family of monsters because, you know, there's also like, there's all kinds of were creatures from different cultures and parts of the world. So there's sort of like, I like that too, the way that the hunters were getting their own sort of like lexicon built up, but it was really a bunch of Leonard Skinner fans like trying to work out a taxonomy for creatures that have no names and no, kind of cool.
Sure.
That's awesome. This is Richard Speight Jr. stopping in to say hi and let you know that we've got to take a quick break.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Connell from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer N.C. Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
Thanks for supporting Supernatural then and now. And now, back to the show.
There's so many things in here in this script that I really love. Chris Cottier's character, you know, so many levels to that character. And then the FBI guy that comes on in.
Charles like Whitfield. Charles Malik Whitfield.
Yeah. He's really great. And, you know, there's this whole other thing where he's chasing the boys. So you got lots of different things going on. I guess there's really no question to this other than it's a comment saying, kudos, it's a great script.
Rob, you being a music guy, I'm curious if you noticed this because it stood out to me. I thought the score was especially good in this one.
It was. I did stand out to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
It felt big.
Yeah, Chris did this one. It was so much fun. You know, one of the most fun scenes I had doing was going to Ronald's house.
Yes.
And
yes.
And, right.
And here, the Fortean Times, that was a real cover of a magazine.
Wow.
I used to have a subscription to the Fortean
Times. Of course.
No follow-up questions, Your Honor.
The whole laser eyes, to this day, my wife, if she's see something like that, she go, "He's got the laser eye." You'll see that. Martha will go, you know, that's something hilarious. Like that. And Mandroid, of course, was the
Mandroid's other. Great.
And Chris,
yeah, Mandroid.
Chris was so point, so on point with everything. His timing, his excitement, his exuberance in being a, you know, this crazy guy who lives by himself. He's a night watchman, you know.
But he just stayed this side of cartoony, though. Like, that's what made it great, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he did a great job of grounding the whole thing.
Well, you saw the joy in it. He realized he wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
That was a great thing. Like, he's got a gun. He's got a gun. He's holding up. He's got a bunch of people hostage. He's locked himself in a bank, and he's like, "See, I'm not nuts." But like, he really was so happy in that moment. It was great.
And he really gets into it, like aiming the gun around. I met Chris at a convention early on. He's a really sweet guy, and I wasn't sure if like this was going to be it for him. Like he, you know, then he dies, and we never see this actor again, right?
Yeah,
this
is it. It's a shame. It's too bad, but the laser beam hit him in the back, and
man.
It's like one of the better deaths I have been associated with as a longtime murderer.
Yeah.
People that people love. Like this is, you know, that when he goes down at that moment, and also when the sound drops out, and it's just, and then
that was great. It was so dramatic. And I got to say, I didn't think he was going to die. Like, I know
that's why he had to die. That's why he had, because otherwise he would have been so cool to keep alive.
Yeah.
And watch his evolution as a hunter and have him crisscross back and forth. They had done it in the Slayerverse, the Buffy with Wesley, the character Wesley, where if you saw like Ronald go from kind of has not actually been tested to somebody who has the, you know, the World War One trench face season 10 or something, that would have been just amazing. But I think that was a pretty powerful death.
Kind of think it's a great death, and it makes sense to all of us. I'm sure Chris Gauthier would strongly disagree with that choice.
Well, like I said, he's been to a few conventions. Like the fans caught on too. They got it. This guy's really good. Phil, was this like a mid-season finale or something? It feels that big to me. It feels like...
Well, I don't think so.
You know what I mean?
I don't remember.
When they used to do that, when there was one special week where all the shows like rolled out their biggest... episodes, you know what I mean?
We'd have this was I don't know what episode was this 12 or
12?
Something?
It might have been coming back out of the
it might have been hiatus. Coming back because we usually it was after. Like between 9 and 9, 11, somewhere at 9 and 11,
which I think 9 and 10
we,
most of the time.
Yeah, we showed 9 or 10 in a row and then take a break in December, come back in late January or something. There's always like 5 weeks off. I don't know, I'd have to look at all of them and see what.
Circling back on the shooting of it, Phil, you talked about it being in a real bank, which is an amazing coup for just...
Yeah, that vault door is real.
Bang for your buck. But what was the downside? Like, that was, you know, because you're in small spaces, like, what was the pain about shooting in a bank?
All night shooting, because we could only be there at night.
Would the crew take any of the money that was just in the vault?
Yeah, what happened to that?
I don't see why they wouldn't.
That part of the vault wasn't available to us.
That's convenient.
There was two sections of the vault.
That seems like they didn't trust you.
I think a little bit.
That's weird.
A little bit. But the
I wouldn't let a film crew of a film I was making shoot in my own home.
You gotta remember, of course, some of the stuff we built, like the video room we built, mm-hmm. and some of the hallways, so it married in, so it allowed this kind of labyrinth. And plus, that vault, those stairs, you actually come down into the vault, into the bank from the street level. It's actually below street level because it's on a hill in Vancouver. The whole building is built on a on an angle, kind of.
Oh wow!
So when you do come down the stairs, you're upstairs to get in, and then you immediately come down into that big room. So that was all that was all real. And there was the vault part was real. And then the, you know, video room and the, some of the hallways where they were looking around and closets and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And you had to shut down a street? You had to shut down the street outside?
Yeah, we did that. I think we were there over at the bank and at the, and the outside probably 3 or 4 days probably.
That just feels so big. I mean, that just feels big budget, man. I feel like they wouldn't, this very same script would not have been made at that price point 6 years later. Well, I don't know.
I mean, the stuff was kind of tight on a, you know, we were only in one little corner and our big giant visual effect was actually the helicopter.
Yeah.
That was not
really,
you know, that was all CG. We didn't do that, you know, that fly.
And that like does, it's a worthwhile investment because I think that's why everyone is kind of in the back of their mind thinking, wow, that was huge.
Yeah.
There was a helicopter at the party.
Maybe, yeah.
I think, you know, there's the command center, there's the SWAT truck. There's all these other cars, you know, a lot of them are just blocking the road. They're actually, we just put skins on them and make them look like they're part of Milwaukee. You know, you know, and then the news people, we've got real news cams. So we're like doing zooms and things like that.
Yeah.
To make that real. I used to be a news cam cameraman when I first got out of college. So that all that was very in my wheelhouse, I guess. I'd been to, not a standoff or a bank robbery, but, you know, stuff like that. We call that spot news. When it's on the spot, you got to get there. So
also from your Max Headroom experience.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes. all that is there.
That's awesome.
But, you know,
that is awesome.
All the video stuff, we had to set up all the security cam points of view so they could see things. And we'd have to, you know, we did the zoom ins and things like that. We had to, you know, make sure we had the right angles to get the glow that laser eyes.
Right. Was any of that special effect?
No, I mean, we might have added a little glow there, but that wasn't much. It was to be kind of silvery.
Right.
But, you know.
It's great.
I think, it was super, you know, watching it again, it was like, man, we did some cool stuff.
Yeah. Ben, was the episode always called Night Shifter?
As long as it had a name, yes. I recall for some reason, I do remember that moment. I remember telling Kripke the title of it. He was working on some other thing in the writer's room, and I was like, it should be called Night Shifter.
That makes sense, though. I mean, that's really good.
I thought it was brilliant.
And it makes not a lot of sense. It sounds like it makes sense, but it doesn't.
But, you know,
He's
shifting. It's night.
Well, no,
often,
but it's like,
but not exclusively.
Not right, exclusively.
But the big setup, though, about the night, the guard getting killed.
Yeah,
you know,
Ronald is a night guard, a night shift.
That's true.
Guard,
he works night shift, and he runs into a shifter, and it's almost like one of those Wheel of Fortune puzzles that has
Do titles? Is the writer responsible for the titles?
I think a lot of the time that was the way it worked out. I recall titling most of mine. Sometimes the title I chose was like too asinine or up its own ass.
I don't know. So
it had
know.
Something to do too much ass in it. Had too much
That's
ass.
A great title.
Ghost Facers. Everyone Hates Hitler.
Ghost Facers. What's that?
Everyone Hates Hitler was.
Oh, yeah.
Hitler.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hollywood Babylon, that was the other one.
Yeah,
that one
might have been Eric. I'm not sure.
So Ben, you know, you write these scripts, you don't exactly know who's assigned to the slot to direct it, at least, or maybe you did at a point, but here you are, you write the script, and then the maestro, Phil, gets it. That had to be exciting that you weren't getting shuttled off to some, you know, flunky.
I came to understand only through the process completely how much that is true. Like watching kind of, no, that's just truly like the amount of invention and sort of like, I don't know. No one's informed Phil that he's not making a major feature motion picture.
Good. Keep it that way.
No one ever told him.
Nobody's
and I don't think anyone should tell him. He seems perfectly content. Yeah. But like a lot of like also really penetrative thinking into what the characters, if they're going to do something here, how does it reinforce the theme, the story, the character in that moment? Like, so those things are like, yeah. And so then only, I think more so after that, I would start to like watch the dice start to roll at the beginning of the season and see like, oh no, he's not going to do that one. All right. I mean, but there are other very like talented, I had a lot of good runs with Bob Singer, you know, like okay. He's also someone who obviously knew the show backwards and forwards and like, you know, I think also a number of memorable episodes, but Phil, you're very special.
What a great way to wrap up this phenomenal conversation.
Oh, wait a minute. You're not even going to ask the one most important question.
God, Rich, I can't believe you're not going to ask
Well,
that
I thought
one
you were
going to
take it, Rob, and you didn't. I said, well, I guess
you know
we're
what?
Not going there.
Let's just go ahead and have Phil ask himself.
Yes.
What was the question,
you
Phil?
You didn't ask about the song at the end.
Oh, right.
It's
the best.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Music drop.
Best music drop.
Sorry, guys, I got to go now.
Let me tell you something else. A little backstory about Rob Benedict and Rich Spade. We've been watching Supernatural from the get-go on Netflix. Between season one, we didn't get any music.
None.
Anybody recognizes. No. We got nothing.
No. Right.
Because of the weird contract loophole for season one.
Right.
So it's so GD refreshing to hear the hits of the 70s and 80s.
So when you hear,
on the tracks, it's great.
Yeah. You hear Styx ripping in there. You're like, oh my God, this is the actual song.
Yeah. You know? And the way you guys, Phil, the way you and the team like chopped it up to make it impactful and sort of drug out parts. So great.
We asked Chris to just create the beat because it stops before the scream comes in.
Mm-hmm.
We had it just play and it was like, no, that's not right. And so I think it was me and Tom McQuaid, our editor at the time. We pushed the scream of the song right when Dean says we're screwed. But then we had that huge gap. So I think we asked either our music editor, Dino, or Chris to come up with that little toot, 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 and just repeat it until we got to it.
Huh.
And so that's how that came about. But that was super fun because it was like so perfect in that this was going to be a bigger thing that, you know, we're going to see this guy again. He's going to show up in their lives chasing him with the power of the FBI.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, it was almost like a remix, like Renegade remix.
Yeah, a little bit.
The Segrisha mix.
A little bit.
I challenge everyone to find a more powerful, I would say also the emergence of death.
One of my favorite moments in the entire
as
series.
As far as like, those two to me are like the moments of
With the car and the
Remix.
That was a young lady in the promo department at the CW who sang that.
Wow. Jen Titus.
Really?
Is that
Jen Titus?
Titus?
Yeah, she works in the. She at the time. I don't know where she is now, but we had her. She did it as a goof. And then we said, wait a minute, let's see what that song is. And I forget who's the originator.
It's Ralph Stanley, isn't it?
You're Ralph Stanley. Nice old, yeah, I think it is. Yeah. It's like an old. Yeah.
It's old bluegrass, old bluegrass tune.
So the way she did it, we were like, why can't we use that? So we paid her some money and she recorded it.
And
that is lore
there. That is massive lore. Because that's
like
an epic
like
song.
Pink Floyd recording the great gig in the sky. You know what I mean? Yeah. That like, woman who came in and sang that. That's awesome.
We did it. We paid her some cash.
That's awesome. Just the way in the industry.
She accepted legal tender as payment.
I only get paid in unregistered handguns.
Like the old days. Back when we were running whiskey. But I digress. Gentlemen, thank you so much for doing this. This is awesome. Two of the greats teaming up together to talk about a great episode.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
Lots of
Phil
fun.
Segrisha.
Good thing.
Hey, this is Jeffrey Dean Morgan. We are going to take a quick break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Jeffrey Dean Morgan again. Welcome back to the podcast.
God, I love those guys. And I feel like I'm worried that people are going to stop believing us because after every interview, we're always like, what a great interview.
Yeah.
But we really have great interviews on this show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fascinating people, you know?
Yeah. Amazing. And these are two that we've had on before. It was great to have them together. Really did feel like two all-stars.
I do like having the guys or people, guys and gals, who have worked together on episodes because they really have a shared, different but shared experience.
You know, memory.
Ben from the writing of it and Phil from the directing of it, and a little bit of overlap in pre-production, but very different experiences. And like you say, different memories of the experience. It really makes for an interesting conversation.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's talk about the mythology.
Mythology. Mythology. Myth. Myth. Yes. Mythology. You know what? We don't have to do much with mythology this time, Robbie. You know why? Because we done did it.
Yeah, we can kind of cheat here because we've talked about shapeshifters.
Right. So we're gonna this is gonna be crazy. Robbie and I are gonna sound very different, and we probably have big lapels and bell bottoms on. But this was way back in season 1, episode 6, Skin, when we talked about shapeshifters. Let's take a dive into the vault for this bad boy.
Shapeshifters exist in several different mythologies. Typically, the stories are about shapeshifting from human to animal.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Which, ironically, when I first saw the episode, this isn't a joke, I thought when I saw the shot of the rat, I was like, oh, is it a rat now? I honestly didn't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Here's what I didn't totally understand. What is the shapeshifter?
It's just, when it's not Jensen?
When Jensen sheds its skin, what is it? We never really know.
I don't know. They talk a lot about, like, maybe it's so hideous that it evolved.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know.
Never really got there.
No.
Well, it is going to come back in later episodes of Supernatural, I'm told.
Look at this. Check out this piece of mythology that I'm just pulling out of my brain. Did you know that there are stories in Norse mythology where Odin and Loki, Loki,
right,
have taken the form of women to nurse the children other women have given birth to?
That's gross. I can't believe you would do that.
I think that's called A-level parenting. You're not just going to change a diaper, brother. You're going to become a woman and help out with the nursing. That's good parenting.
There's something about it that bothers me.
Well, because you're making it dirty in your mind.
Okay.
And as a guy who played Loki, I'm telling you, it's just being a committed husband.
Okay. I guess it would be gross if you shapeshifted to be the baby to latch on.
Which is what you would do. To my teat. And I don't appreciate it.
In Greek mythology, Proteus is the god of shapeshifting.
Ah.
Lots of shapeshifters. It'd be an interesting ability to have.
If I could shift some shape, I'd take some of this donut down here, give it to me up top, be a little broad-shouldered.
Shift your own shape?
Shift my own shape.
I'd go from an apricot to a... I'd go from a pear to a...
Upside-down pear.
Exactly. Most popular shapeshifters in pop culture... Some could argue Mystique from X-Men.
And the people who would make that argument are people who know who Mystique from X-Men is.
That's right.
I do not.
Mystiquers, they call themselves.
Ah.
Wow, that was amazing. It was as if it were like 3 months ago.
You've grown up so much since then.
You know, one thing I'll add too, that's that, you know, this different, as Ben was saying, this is a little bit different. This shapeshifter is a little bit different than the last shapeshifter in this episode. One thing that we didn't see before is that he actually kills... He almost clones them.
What do you mean?
Because he kills his victim,
right,
but their body's still there.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, I didn't realize that they had to be dead to be shapeshifted. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get that part of it, but
right.
I guess I missed it.
So, yeah, and I didn't see that last time. It wasn't like, I think that he just, like, killed them and then put their skin on. But this one killed them and then recreated their skin.
Right, exactly.
That's why there were two of her at the end.
It was kind of clonish.
Was it Clooney?
All that cloning around.
I love George Clooney.
George Clooney.
It's time for fun facts.
Fun facts. Fun. I love getting a fax.
You know, the Fortean Times was an actual British magazine about unexplained phenomena.
Say that again in a British accent. Here he is, Robert Edict, as a British man reading this fun fact.
The Fortean Times was an actual British magazine about unexplained phenomena.
More tea, please. Sorry, I'm having a spot of tea while you read this bit. I concur.
Well, hello, mythology.
Hello, Mr.ology.
The issue that Ronald Resnick shows Sam and Dean has a Cyberman from Doctor Who on the cover.
Oh, did you know that Mandroid is a term that was also used in an X-Files episode, Jose Chung's From Outer Space?
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
And then the episode title is an homage to the 1982 film Night Shift, starring Henry Winkler, Michael Keaton, and Shelley Long.
That movie is a masterpiece. If you haven't seen that movie, Night
truly
Shift,
is.
Go watch it.
One of my favorites.
In Latin America, the title translates into Mimicry 2.
That's funny. One is already a sequel?
I guess it's, yeah. I guess it's Mimicry 1 already came out. Mimicry Uno was already a hit somewhere in Latin America.
In Germany, the title translates to The Mandroid.
Huh. I don't believe that.
Yeah. I mean, it translates, I think what he's saying is that this is what it's called in those countries.
Ah, okay. That makes more sense.
Right.
Mandroid is also a 1993 direct-to-VHS film starring Brian Cousins.
Ah.
Or Brian's cousin, if you have a friend named Brian and know his cousin. Well, that was awesome. What an episode. We both loved it. You got big beards. It was just a great experience. And we had Ben, we had Phil. The whole episode's been a home run.
It really has. It's been beards and fun all the way through. This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester and Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars included Chris Gauthier, Charles Malik Whitfield, Emmy Anke, Georgia Craig, and Sanjay Talwar.
Night Shifters was written by Ben Edlund and directed by Phil Segrisha.
Edited by Tom McQuaid, music by Christopher Lennertz.
Supernatural is executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
The episode features the classic song Renegade by Styx.
The episode originally aired on January 25th, 2007.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spade Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine, written by Stephen Hine and Heide Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What's up, Booty?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
The episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at SPN Then and Now.
And by all means, join our Patreon at patreon.com/SPN Then and Now.
Hey, everybody, it's Rob Benedict. Two decades or two marriages? Hold on. Jesus Christ. Really scary when you're interrupted by your own voice. Okay. SWAT storms the...
Dude, if I'm ever an action star, I want my name to be SWAT Storms.
SWAT Storms. SWAT Storms.
You know what you should do? Like my first movie as that action hero, the movie's called The Building. And so on the top, it has my name. SWAT Storms. The Building.
The Building. That's right. That's good.
Thank you.
Okay. Rich. Night Shifter. Was that too slurry just now?
No.
All right.
And now... Oh, wait. We got to wrap up the interview.
Yeah. Was that someone saying miss, but they had a lisp?
Yeah.
Myth? Yeah? Oh, that's good. Okay, sorry. Yeah.
It's like the last name is Ology. Myth? Mythology? Yes.
Oh, hi, Mr. Mythology.
What can I do for you?
Hi, Mr. Mythology. Is it Myth Mythology? The issue that Ronald Resnick's show, Sam and Dean, had as a...
What?
The issue...
You've got issues.
That Ronald Resnick shows... Okay, this is the apostrophe.
Ignore the apostrophe.
Okay,
ignore the
it.
Apostrophe.
Got it. Yeah. The issue that...
Story Mill Media.